Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio. We are broadcasting live. We are broadcasting live from the extraordinarily well armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin, where freedom is our best friend here on Well Armed Radio. Look at that. It's been so long. I can't even get my intro right. It's always my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. Just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism here. And encourage you to be a part of the show with calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation in a couple different ways. You can call the show if you're listening live, 563-999-3787. I just scheduled the show about 10 minutes ago and posted it to the Well Armed Radio MeWe page. And so whenever I do that, my odds of getting, and also it's 10 p.m., so my odds of getting live listeners are slim to none. I'm enabled, so you guys are enablers. Most of the listeners are podcast. So then that's why you're enablers, because I don't feel guilty about not doing a live show at a more appropriate time, like 7, 8, 9 o'clock, because I'm like, well, everybody listens to the podcast anyway, so it doesn't matter what time I do it. But, you know, I really should get back to it. Summer is always my lowest listenership anyway, but I should get back to a regular time, an earlier time. And then I should also be a diligent and professional host and schedule these things enough in advance so that people have enough advance notice that they wanted to listen live. But, you know, I'm just a hack trying to do my thing. So this is what you get. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And hope that you guys are all having a fabulous Independence Day. I just noticed that it's been almost a month. I think my last show was June 5th. So yeah, it's been a bit since we talked, and it's really good to be back with you guys. What's been going on since then? Well, let's see. I think there was one weekend we took the yacht to Port Washington, and then I think I planned to do a show, but I got back and I don't remember. I can't remember if I've done a show since then or not. Of course, the easiest way to figure that out is, it's creepy, but, you know, you just go to your Google timeline. If you forget what day you were somewhere, you just go to your Google timeline and, it shows you like every place you've ever been since you've had, I have an Android phone. I don't know if it's the same for, you guys would have to let me know this. I don't know if it's the same for Apple phone users. But for me, so all I did now, because I'm trying to remember when did I go to Port Washington. So I open up Google Maps, go to my timeline, and it shows you, if you don't pick a day or anything, it shows you every place you've ever, literally every place you've ever been. And then this one says I've been to 835 places. So then I just go up to Port Washington. I click on this. There was a restaurant we went to. I've only been there once. So that was the Patio Sports Bar and Grill. So I'm going to click on that, and it's going to say I was there on, June 11th, Saturday, June 11th. So that is when so I haven't had a show since I've been to Port Washington. Gosh, we haven't talked in quite a while, which is, of course, my fault, not yours. But June 11th, we took the yacht up to Port Washington, had a great cruise up. It was awesome. Water was great, almost glassy, few ripples. Set the autopilot, put it on the most efficient cruise speed, and boom, get right up there. Had dinner, came back. Waves are coming back. There was a little bit of wave action, nothing terrible, but just a bit annoying. I think on the way back, I had to bump my speed down. My most efficient cruise speed is 42 miles an hour, 42 and a half, depends a little bit on wind, but usually 42 and a half miles an hour is my really efficient cruise speed, which is super fast for a yacht. I mean, most yachts, you go to a marina, talk to guys, their efficient cruise is 22, 24, 28. Every once in a while you'll hear a guy say, my 32 is my efficient cruise, but just with my triple outboards, and they're not diesels, they're gas, of course, Mercury 450R racing motors. My boat just is efficient cruising at a faster speed, which the shitty part about that is Lake Michigan is, it's not always hospitable to cruising at my efficient speed. And so you got a guy who cruises at 24, 25 miles an hour, and that's pretty slow. I mean, you can take some pretty good waves and, not that big of a deal. It's still a relatively comfortable ride. I say pretty big. You know, 2 to 3 footers are nothing if you're going 25 miles an hour. Even on my boat, they're nothing. But the problem is that then that's a very inefficient speed for me. Like if I'm below, 22, like I'm falling off a plane, and then you're just plowing water, and then you're just incredibly inefficient. But so went up to Port Washington. That was a great trip. Met some cool people up there. Then we've also what have we done? We took the yacht to Michigan, first time ever crossing Lake Michigan with a boat. And that was one hell of an adventure. We went to Saugatuck. We've been wanting to get to Saugatuck for a while. Been wanting to get to Saugatuck for, I don't think my first year I really thought about it, but we definitely thought about it last year a couple times and didn't make it. We had scheduled a couple times and had to cancel because of high waves. on Lake Michigan. One time I think it was just bad weather. So yeah, so that's been on the bucket list. So we got there a couple weeks ago. Here's another flight. So I'm back to my Google timeline, and then I'm zooming in now on Saugatuck, and I can tell you, because that was not last week. Was it last week or the weekend before? That was, yeah, last weekend, because the 24th, Friday the 24th through the 26th. So yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that, yeah, that was last weekend. So great trip over. The trip over was not perfect seas, but I've always been, you know, crossing Lake Michigan on a boat has always been on my bucket list. It's always been something I wanted to do. It's a little bit scary. Excuse the noise. Someone shooting fireworks off outside my house. So if you hear some booms and pops, that's what it is. I'm not in Highland Park. It's not gunfire. So the trip over, you know, it's just, I always wondered what it would feel like to be out of sight of land on personal, you know. Same thing like with an airplane. Like, you know, I've flown commercial. You're in a big plane. But what would it feel like to be like on a small plane? And I would think even, and now some of the listeners to the show, one of the listeners to the show, he's a pilot. So correcting me right now or answering this question right now as he's listening to the podcast, whenever he's listening to this podcast. Hey, Phil. So, but I don't know if you're, I know when you rent planes, if you rent a single engine Cessna, I know this because when I started my private pilot's license, I remember asking these questions. I don't think they want you to take a single engine Cessna across Lake Michigan. I don't know if it's illegal to do, but I think it's supposedly ill-advised because a single engine plane, if you go down in over Lake Michigan, you're dead. So, I mean, same thing with boats. They say don't cross Lake Michigan in a single engine boat because if you have engine problems, you're fucked. I mean, you know, I don't know if you're necessarily dead, but you could be out there for quite a bit of time. I mean, I don't know how long it would take for the wind and there's sometimes that seas get bad enough to capsize even a good sized boat in Michigan. But I think if you're not trying to make headway, I would think most boats I don't think there's anything on Lake Michigan that's, it's hard to say. I mean, I say that I haven't been out there and anything crazy. I mean, there's times when there's, you know, 12, 14 foot waves on Lake Michigan. And by that, really nasty, choppy waves. I mean, I guess the nickname for Lake Michigan is Lake Washing Machine because unlike the ocean where you got a 14 foot wave, it's a swell, very far spaced apart. And I think even in a small boat, you go up the swell, you go down the swell. But in Lake Michigan, you could have rollers and breakers breaking waves, you know, I've heard it's just terrible. And I've heard that there's guys who, like, because they have like the Chicago to Mackinac sailboat race, and there's guys that have sailed ocean racing who've come out and sailed the Chicago to Mackinac race in bad weather and said they had a whole new respect for sailing on Lake Michigan because it's incredibly rough and dangerous waters. So anyway, so I don't know if you're going across in a single engine boat, your engine dies, if you're like dead per se. I mean, I think most of the time at some point the wind and waves would, but I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know if the wind and waves ever blow because it changes, seems like daily. If the wind and waves ever blow long enough the same direction to get you, how fast do you drift? I don't know. Do you drift at 5 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour? Because you're in the middle of the lake, you still got 40 miles east or west. But if you're drifting at 10 miles an hour, that's, okay, 40 miles, 10 miles an hour. Maybe 10 miles an hour is probably really fast to drift. I can't, because that would only be, what, 4 hours? If you were in the middle of the lake. So maybe you drift at 5 miles an hour. So that'd be 8 hours. So you'd need 8 hours of wind in a consistent direction to drift at 5 miles an hour if you're in the very middle of the lake going east or west to hit shore. And in the middle of the lake, this is a question I've always wondered. I mean, I've heard of it. There is no cell service. That was something I figured out on this crossing. No cell service in the middle of Lake Michigan. In fact, you lose cell service faster than I thought out on Lake Michigan. I thought you'd be like, you know, 20, 30 miles out before you lose cell service. I mean, I feel like we lost cell service 10 miles out. It's really hard to say because, so here's my impression. So the day we crossed was Friday, June 24th. I think we had following seas, which actually I don't think helped us that day because just the way the timing of the waves, if they're coming at you and you're going fast, you tend to skip across them and skip the troughs a little bit versus if you're going with them, then you sometimes settle down a little bit more into the trough and then you get a little bit more of a porpoise effect. You hit the, you kind of come out of the next one. So it was small. It was like one foot waves or less. So it was relatively smooth. There was a few white caps out there, but it was relatively smooth water. You know, we set the boat at the efficient cruise, put the autopilot on. I was going about 42, 42 and a half. And every once in a while, I got a little bit, I won't call it bouncy, but a little bit porpoisey, soft bouncy. And then the boat would settle because every once in a while you hit, you know, a bigger set of waves. But then we got to Sauk. And then, so the wind, it was, I think out in the middle lake, it was 60 some degrees. So it wasn't, you know, 63, 64, maybe. It wasn't the warmest today. So I give the crossing the eastbound crossing a 7 out of 10. Could have been a little bit warmer. It was kind of muggy out there. Could have been a little bit drier. And could have been just a little bit lower waves. And then I'd give it, you know, then you're at like, and again, a 10 out of 10 would be like glass with like 85 degrees, but no humidity. That would be a 10 out of 10. So I'd give it, you know, if it had been a little bit warmer and a little bit calmer, I would have given it a 9 out of 10 because it was sunny. But here's my impressions, so going across, it was amazing how far out. So you're like, we're going, you know, you get out there, we set the autopilot, set the boat on plane at 42 and a half miles an hour. And so, you know, you're cruising. And then you turn around and Milwaukee's still right there. I mean, I'm not right there, but I mean, you can still see the U.S. Bank building, Northwestern Mutual Tower. So you feel like you've been going for a while and you turn around, you can still, I mean, when I say going for a while again, I don't know if it was 10 minutes, 15, it felt like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and you could turn around and you can still see Milwaukee. And you feel like, well, shit, we've been driving for 30 minutes and I can still see Milwaukee. It's, you know, it's a little bit disappointing because you feel like, you know, you're not making progress. But yeah, it took us over to, I mean, at 42 miles an hour, it was like, you know, 2 hours and 15 minutes to cross, you know, 2 hours and maybe two and a half. I mean, it was hard to say. And that's if I don't count till we were outside of the Milwaukee Harbor, till we were into the Saugatuck, or which is the Kalamazoo River, and the Saugatuck cut into the Kalamazoo River. On the way over, weather good, sun good. I mean, it just, you could really enjoy the ride a little bit. Again, things that kind of surprised me is you weren't out of sight of land for too long. I mean, maybe a third of the trip, the middle third. Here we got someone. Now I got to grab my headset. We got someone calling in here, so I'll click over here real quick and see what we got. 323 area code. And welcome to Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Yeah, my name's Joe. How are you doing?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Not bad. You just mentioned land. I don't know in what context, but that made me think of Bill Gates and how he's grabbing up tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands of acres. I'm sure you probably heard of it.
Yep, yep.
Whoa.
So, and I heard.
Do you think this,
go ahead.
What do you think his purpose is?
So, some people I've heard, and so my opinion is tainted because I think I've heard this in either the internet or somewhere, but that he's trying to buy up ranch/cattle land so that we're stuck with. You know, veggie burgers and vegetarian, you know, trying to control the food supply. I mean, that's, you know, I won't say that that's my opinion, but I mean, I'm just saying things that I've heard is that that's something that he was, people speculate would be.
Well, it's an interesting hypothesis. From what I understand, if I remember correctly, because I did read this about a couple of days ago, I didn't read the entire article, but I read the headline. I think there's a Norwegian company, if I'm right. I don't know, it could be Oklahoma. That's preparing a billion bugs for the world. Did you
preparing
read about
billion,
that or hear about
preparing
that?
A billion what?
Bugs. You know,
bugs?
they want us to transition over from meat to eating bugs.
Oh, bugs, like the insects, bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen
insects,
that too.
Yeah.
I mean, and they do. I mean, they have like, I mean, there's now like this, I've seen them on Shark Tank, the TV show Cricket Protein. And it's just, yeah, you know, so what the thing with land would certainly be a phenomenal investment because they're not making more land. Okay, maybe volcanoes and stuff. I mean, so that in that respect, it's a phenomenal investment. But you know, I worry, well, as much, you know, Bill Gates, which who isn't even, you know, the richest person in the world anymore, but the Chinese. I mean, the Chinese own so much of America, which I find incredibly troubling. And you would think, okay, whatever, they want to own it here. We're a free country. Well, but then you see like the NBA, like teams won't criticize China because so then you realize it's not just if China owns the movie studios are very sympathetic to China. You know, the Chinese now have editorial control over
like
some
the
movies
top gun.
Because
yeah.
So, I mean, that's troubling as fuck. I mean, and it's, I don't think that's conspiracy theory. I mean, it's just a fact. The Chinese own a shit ton of stuff here in America. And that's a problem. I mean, that's a huge problem. And,
it's a natural problem, you know.
Conflict of interest.
Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
So,
not just the United States, but no nation should have their resources being controlled by another nation. I don't think they should have them controlled by 10%, 15%, or 5%. Every nation should develop the resources independently.
Well,
but
if you go to
China not only has the issues that you've just delineated, but they also own 95% of the computer chips and something like, I believe, 95% of the nitrogen that's necessary for productive farming. So how this got into China had to be done by design, because if it was done by stupid people, they would have, you know, they'd have to have been born with altruism plus Down syndrome. So
yeah, I mean,
I don't have much faith in Congress.
I don't underestimate the power of stupidity and the power of greed, because I think you know, there's people who would sell out. There's people in this country who would, and I think of the Clintons who would sell out the country for their own personal gain. There's other countries though where you like, and I'm trying to think if it was, it might be China or it might be like some in the Middle East, but I think it was Dubai. You have to have a local business partner. Like you can't just, Americans can't go up there and set up shop and start running business. You have to have a local, you have to have local ownership, a local business partner. And so and that's what other countries do to make sure that stuff like what we're seeing happening in this country doesn't happen, where the Chinese are buying up all kinds of assets, real estate, corporations, you know, that kind of thing. Although, I mean, to be honest, I think the biggest, and I watched something on this, you know, you talk about BlackRock and Vanguard, the hedge fund companies are the big,
they own almost
everything. And that's why, so not, to roll it back to the gun topic, you know, I used to wonder, like back when, you know, Starbucks came out against open carry, and I said to our members, I was like, dude, Wisconsin Carry members were like, oh, well, you know, it's those stupid open carriers. They ruined it for everybody. You know, I'm still going to buy my Starbucks. I'm like, dude, if you don't make Starbucks pay, other companies are going to realize that the gun constituency isn't strong enough. Because you got to make it. It used to be people were afraid. They saw what happened with Smith and Wesson, and people were afraid of pissing off gun owners because it was bad for business, you know, boycotts. And but then after the Starbucks thing, I think that really opened the floodgates for people to say, hey, look, you can shaft the gun owners. You can shaft gun owners, you know, say that guns aren't welcome in coffee shops and totally diss gun owners, and they'll just turn the other cheek. And shortly after that, then you saw, you know, Walmart and just all these businesses coming out against open carry. And I was like, what? You know, there was two things. First, it's the phony Twitter army, you know, all those bots and all these fake accounts that start these executives start hearing things on social media. But the second thing is, now I realize these companies are all owned by BlackRock and Vanguard. They'll hold the majority of shares. So it just takes one phone call. I mean, I think some of the most powerful people in the country are probably the CEOs or the executives who run Vanguard. Because that's why all of a sudden all the big companies, from whether it be Home Depot, Lowe's, they all come down at the same time with the same policies. You're like, you would think just for a competitive advantage, some people would still be the mask mandates. I mean, I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I think it stands to reason that once one company starts doing the mask mandate, I bet you BlackRock and Vanguard, because they're the majority shareholders in almost every publicly traded company, said, hey, we want mask mandates. That, you know, it's one phone call. And it's no wonder that then all – and again, there is no independence of companies where the competitive environment isn't so competitive, I guess is what I'm saying, when they're all controlled by the same entity. But so – yeah, well, Joe, I appreciate the call. I got to get back to some topics here. Now, do you want me to are you listening? Do you want me to drop you, or do you listen from on hold, or just completely drop the call because you're listening?
Oh no, I'm going to go now. I'm going to go. So I'll let you get back to your program. So take care and be safe. All right.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the call. And just real quick, where are you calling from? Oops, I think Joe just dropped. I think Joe's called before, and I want to say, I forget if he said he was St. Louis or Kansas City, but anyway, Joe, appreciate the call. So yeah, back to, I'm now halfway through the show, and all I've been talking about is boating and crossing Lake Michigan, but I actually intended to do that. It was my intention to cross Lake Michigan. The ride over was great. It kind of surprised me how, it was a little bit hazy, so but you know, you get, it's maybe only a third of the way that you couldn't see. I thought, you know, you get 20 minutes out, you can't see Milwaukee, and then you can't see Michigan until you're 20 minutes from it. But it's more like you get about 45 minutes out, and then you can't see Milwaukee. And then, you got probably another 40, 45 minutes where you can't see anything. And then 45 minutes. That's not adding up to 2.5 hours. But well, let's see. So let me do the math here. No, that's about right. Because that's 45, 45. That's about 135 minutes. So yeah, that's about 135 minutes. That's just over 2 hours. So yeah. So so that's probably all right. That's probably about 40, 45 minutes. And then that's real nice. I can see. I'm looking out my driveway and I can see fireworks landing in my middle of my driveway that my neighbors are shooting off. That's real fucking cold. Anyway, I got security cameras around my house and I can, again, see things landing in the middle of my driveway that are still on fire. It's actually still burning, which makes me want to go outside and say something. I think I'm going to have to. I mean, if there's stuff in my driveway burning. All right. You guys, I got to do this. Let me put some music on here. I'll be back with you in 4 minutes, 5 minutes. All right. I apologize. Yeah, I'm sitting here watching my, I got these, my surveillance cameras, and I'm watching, so I'm doing, you know, here doing the podcast, and I look, and here's this ball of flame that comes and lands in the middle of my driveway, which is fine, it's the middle of my driveway, but if flaming stuff is landing in the middle of my driveway, what the hell is landing on my roof? I mean, the wind's coming, so I go out there, sure enough, my neighbor's shooting shit. I was like, hey, Bill, are you shooting stuff off? He goes, yeah. I said, it's landing on fire in my driveway. He's like, all right, well, we can stop. I said, yeah, I think that would be a good, anyway, what the fuck? So, anyway, Cross Lake, Michigan, great time, bucket list thing. Saugatuck's pretty cool. Seems like kind of a Libby area. Every like shop in Saugatuck has a pride flag, but you know, it was fun. The trip back. Oh, so this is the bad part about boating. So, the wave forecast, you can't count on it for more than like a couple days, it seems like. So we left Friday, and honestly, the wave forecast for Sunday didn't change a lot. It was pretty much the same. It said 1.9 footers for Sunday. So we leave Friday, get there Friday, Saturday. It rained a little bit on Saturday. That wasn't in the forecast. Then Sunday, we're supposed to come back. And then Friday night, we see on the news over in Saugatuck that there's supposed to be small craft warnings, beach warnings for Sunday. And then you got to go to sleep on Saturday night thinking, what the hell do we got in front of us? You know, we got in good weather, 2.5, in good weather, we got 2.5 hours crossing Lake Michigan, but in bad weather, and that's if I can do my 42 mile an hour cruise, but in bad weather can only do 20. Then you're talking, it turns to 4.5 hour drive. So I did get a good, relatively good sleep on Sunday night. We got up, and as soon as I woke up at like 7 a.m., went to the bathroom, like, packing up, we're going. So we leave the marina. I think by the time we got everything, ate breakfast, got everything off, we left Saugatuck Tower Marine, which is actually in Douglas. It's across the river, across the lake from Saugatuck, and left at like 9, just after 9, you know, half hour to get out to Lake Michigan. And then, so we start cruising. There's some waves. It's a little bit bumpy. And then the first third, so I couldn't really, you know, the best I could do was probably about 32. But we were making, it's like, okay. And the first part of the trip was supposed to be the worst, heading seas. So seas are coming right at us. And then it started to get a little bit rough, but then it would kind of ease. So then right in the middle of the lake, it eased up a bit. And so after it had eased up, then I'm like, okay, we're good to go. But then like that last third, it was just not prohibitive, but I mean, we're cruising at 30. And here's the thing. And you don't want to slow down because Lake Michigan can whip up in a hurry. And so as you're going, you want to put as many miles behind you as you can possibly can, because if you need to push the limit of how fast you can go, because the longer you're out there, the more at risk you are for things getting worse. And so anyway, I actually think we ended up crossing at the worst part of the day. And again, there was only, you know, two footers, but then you get into Cape, and see, the 2 footers, no big deal. And they're certainly no big deal at 24 miles an hour, but when you're going 42, well, I wasn't going 42, maybe you're going 32. I mean, and they're heading seas. So you're hitting those. I mean, the seas are coming at you at a pretty good clip. So then, you know, it's a pretty good beating. I mean, and there was times where we were banging and and then it's like, what do? You slow down and burn double the fuel and end up being out there for an extra hour, wondering if the seas get worse? Because if the seas get worse, and then you can't even do, you know, 25 is too much, then you're out there for 6 hours. If you got to slow down to, you know, really slow speed, it's just typical Lake Michigan. The way over was, I don't want to say a fairy tale, but the way over was enjoyable, pleasurable. What you would picture being an awesome time on the boat, and the way back was just white knuckle the whole time. I mean, I've never been so happy to get inside of a break wall in my life. And we've been out in rougher stuff, but not for that long of a trip. I mean, we've been in some rough stuff going up to Sheboygan, but that's only 50 miles. And you're never out of sight of land. And if stuff gets bad, you can just duck into, well, Port Washington is halfway to Sheboygan. You could duck into Port Washington, leave the boat there, and you're 20 minutes from home. Have someone come pick you up. But if we didn't make it back from Saugatuck, if we have to leave the boat in Saugatuck, to have someone come pick us up is like a, I don't know, 5-6 hour drive to get over there. And so, yeah, it just, would I do it again? Yeah. But I really, really look hard for less than 1 foot. And this sounds, it sounds lame, but like less than 1 foot waves on the way over and less than 1 foot waves projected on the way back. So even if it gets bad, if it gets to, cause it was forecasted for 1.9. I'm like, oh, 1.9 is not bad. But what you'll realize is every, you know, a 2 foot wave means that every once in a while, you're going to get a 3-footer in there. So you're going along, boom, 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 for 30 seconds. All of a sudden, boom, boom, boom. And it's a, that's the part. So, you know, you can't slow. Sometimes you're going along and you see a big wave coming and you're like, oh, shit, we're going to hit. We're going to have a banger here. And then just the way that the waves are, then the way, because again, it's lake washing machine. Then it's just, there's dips and seiche. And it, you know, seiche is where waves hit into each other and then make a bigger wave. So it's hard to explain that, that lake is a beauty and a beast. And we got it both. We got a beauty on the way over to Saugatuck and we got a beast on the way back. And the funny thing was, is I think I was then watching it. I'm looking at the Lake Michigan buoys. I'm learning not to trust just the weather and wave apps, but I'm learning to look at the buoys and see what their actual wave conditions are. And the wave conditions were such that I looked later in the day, I think things got a little better. So I think we might've crossed in the worst part of the day, but you just don't know that. And you can't trust these wave forecasts. So anyway, it was a hell of an experience. Minor casualties of war on the boat. I got these panels on the back of the boat, these plastic panels from all the bouncing, and a couple of screws had worked their way out. And I keep meaning to check those because when I took my trip up to Door County and came back, they were loose, but I caught them before they fell out. So one screw fell out. I never found that. The second one fell out. And so then this panel was only being held by screws on two sides. It's about a 2 foot panel. And then just the banging, then those two side screws, if one screw on each side had fallen out, it still would have been, I think, fine. But because screws on both sides fell out and cracked the corners off. So anyway, getting a new panel ordered, super glued the corners this week. But so I turn around as we're getting back to Milwaukee and, oh, here's a fiberglass plastic panel sitting on the back of the boat in the cockpit seating area. So hell of a trip. Now I've spent 40 minutes talking about what I've been doing the last few weeks and the reasons that I haven't been doing well-armed radio. But we're back. I'm glad to be back. I hope you're glad to have us back. And now let's talk about some other stuff, like what's going on in the world. So first thing I was going to talk about was, it's so frustrating to see Republicans who just don't know how to win. And that's what we've got is I'd say 90% of Republicans have no idea how to win. They're in politics for the wrong reason. They want to be liked. They want to be, I'd say 75% of Republicans are conservative-ish, but only 10% of Republicans are committed to advancing freedom. That's just my opinion. My percentages could be off a little bit, but 90% of Republicans, even if they have some conservative leanings, they have some conservative desires, in practicality, they end up just being go along to get along. They'd rather be elected than be conservative. And they're afraid to be conservative. And they don't have a good understanding of the constituency out there and how much of a constituency freedom has, because freedom has a huge constituency, and Donald Trump proved it. I mean, Donald Trump was the most maligned character assassinated president we've ever had. And he did win re-election by a landslide. And you know, I don't even think I would bet, again, I wouldn't bet my life, but I would bet, okay, I'd bet all the money that I have in my savings. I would say I'd almost bet everything. Again, not my life, but I would probably literally bet half of my net worth, which is millions of dollars. I would bet that Trump, if you had a, you know, a magic eight ball to tell you the truth, that Trump lost it. Like, he won all the bellwether counties. So good. So, and that's the other thing, is that people are now basing their political strategy on the fact that Biden won, when the reality is that Biden didn't win. So that's where just this mind fuck goes on, that people stop even realizing that what they think didn't work, worked. Trump, again, being the most, and for some, maybe even disliked. I mean, you know, I didn't mind Trump's personality at all, but there are some people who probably really were offended by Trump's personality, but, you know, voted for him for his policies. There's guys like me who think that his personality actually attracted people to politics that otherwise wouldn't have been. So, you know, that's where this propensity for Republicans to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. You know, Trump had a winning formula. He knew how to wag the media dog, and he let the results of free market policy create the support from the voting public that gave him, because he got 65 million votes or 63 million votes the first time around. And then in the second 2020, he got 75 million, I think 12 million more votes. And usually, like, if a president gets like 3 million more votes, they have never lost. Again, he won all the bellwether counties. And I don't even buy the, like, oh, well, yeah, but the Democrats, they targeted turnout just enough. No, it was cheating. There's just no doubt in my mind it was cheating. Take out the fraudulent votes, Trump wins by a landslide, probably, by an electoral landslide. So, but again, most Republicans just, they don't know how to fight. They don't know how to win. And this is another example, because Democrats never let a crisis go to waste. Democrats are experts at leveraging the news media, the news cycle, to push their agenda. They're going to do it with Highland Park. You know, they're going to, there's mass shootings, and boom, they use that to leverage. And they even get Republicans to go along. Oh, there's so much. There's a consensus. There's a growing chorus. There's everybody wants, you know, demands that Congress do something, when that's a false perception. But politicians don't know any better. All they do is watch the freaking news, and they base their beliefs and opinions on what they see on the news. If the news shows everybody's up in arms and wants gun control, the politicians think, oh, well, I got to pass gun control. I got to go or find some compromise on gun control. So what happened this past week? Some of you listening to the podcast might have heard of this, but something happened this past week that should have been, that was an opportunity for Republicans to go on mega offense and use the news cycle to their advantage to push for freedom-based legislation. But they didn't do it. Some of them, it probably never crossed their mind. They're just not smart enough. In fact, I'd say probably most of them, it didn't cross their mind. Well, and obviously it didn't cross their mind, because some would have done it. So Republicans just, they don't even have the mindset to win. They don't even have the vision to see how to win. So now, some of you listening, you're probably still thinking, what's Nick talking about? But yeah, something happened this past week. So now I'm going to say it, give you a little bit more of a hint. Something happened in California this past week that was a golden opportunity for Republicans to pass pro-freedom legislation, and they didn't do it. And so for some of you, maybe the light bulb just went on, you know what I'm talking about, but now I'll, you know, spoil the in California this past week, there was some, quote, data breach that released the names of every concealed carry license permit holder in California. Now, in California, it's a shall issue state, so you have to get the blessing of – now, I guess this is my – I don't know California super well, but my understanding is that in some counties, the sheriffs in California issue concealed carry permits. In some counties, like L.A. County, you cannot get one without being, you know, a celebrity, security for a celebrity, blah, 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 blah. You got to know people, blah, 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 blah. It's shall issue, may issue. And then there are some counties where I've heard that the sheriffs are relatively pro-freedom and they will issue concealed carry permits, kind of like a shall issue state would. So this data breach exposed the date of birth, driver's license number, personal information of every concealed carry license holder. And some people might say, oh, there's not many concealed carry license holders in California. There's a whole bunch, even in like LA County, who got it from being in the favor, you know, being a celebrity, being or connections. But then there's a whole bunch of people outstate, because there's a lot of parts of California that are very Republican. They don't have very large populations, but I think landmass-wise, California is even a very conservative state landmass-wise. But then those big concentrations of, you know, Sacramento and L.A., and that's where you end up with San Francisco. That's where you end up with, you know, it's kind of like Illinois' politics are driven by Chicago. It's, you know, the big pop. Outstate Illinois is a pretty conservative area, you know, outside of Springfield, outside of Chicago. There's a couple of liberal enclaves, but it's a pretty conservative area, but it's just the population is just dominated by Chicago. In California, the population is dominated by, you know, L.A., which is Los Angeles, Oakland, dominated by San Francisco. I don't know if San Francisco, I think, is in its own county. I forget what's I don't know California geography that well. I don't know if San Diego, for some reason, I thought San Diego might be a little bit more conservative leaning. But yeah, the big population centers drive California's politics. So this big data breach, and some people say wasn't the unexpected, unintentional data breach that they were thinking, but that it was an intentional data breach. But it was reported in some – I didn't even see it on Fox News, which maybe is not surprising. But when you've got the data breach of thousands – tens of thousands, I mean, I don't know how many people in California, hundreds of thousands of people probably who had concealed carry licenses in California. That puts them at, their privacy is gone. They have big tech fascists who could and would target them. Radical liberals who could and would target them. So this is an opportunity for Republicans to use the news cycle and say, look, this is why we need constitutional carry. When the government has you on a list, your privacy and your safety is just one tyrannical, despotic Democrat away from exposure. And if elected Republicans had 1 ounce of political courage and skill, they would, in the wake of this California data breach exposing concealed carry license permit holders, be pushing for constitutional carry in every state and citing what happened in California. I mean, there's many states where there's Republican governors, but there's a lot of states where there's Republican legislators and not a Republican governor, like Wisconsin. The Wisconsin legislature should be calling a special session and passing emergency bills for constitutional carry. Now, actually, Wisconsin did pass constitutional carry this year. They sent it to Evers' desk because they knew Evers would veto it, but they should do it again. They should call another special session, draft a new bill, and then cite what happened in California and get all the people, and then you'd have the, I don't call it the moral upper hand, but you'd have the leverage. Say, look, this is why we want constitutional carry. When you have government lists of permit holders, those get leaked, and then we're exposing private citizens' information, and that's a huge problem. We're now putting private citizens' safety at risk. And even in states where there's Democrat governors, they should be doing this because the media is going to cover it. You introduce that kind of legislation, the media will cover it. They'll cover it because they think the public will be up in arms about this and not support it. But that's how you wag the media dog. There's a couple things where the media thinks the public is on its side, and it's not. And examples of those are illegal immigration. The media is on the general public. It's like a 75-25 issue is on the anti-illegal immigration side. What's another one? The woke stuff. That might be more of a 60-40 people that buy into the whole woke agenda, but most people really reject that. But the media thinks that most people support it. But crime is another huge one. The media thinks that the whole public is, oh, restorative justice, and, you know, I don't want to call it soft on crime, but prison isn't the answer. Disparately impacts minorities. The majority of the population, especially even in urban areas, is for tough on crime, for law and order. So that's another area where Republicans can be pro law and order, and the media will give them airtime because they think that that airtime is going to benefit the liberal agenda, and it actually benefits the conservative agenda. So here's another one where the Democrats will think, the liberal media will think, oh, you know, the public isn't going to think this is a good idea. But I think the majority of the public will actually think, oh, now I get it. Now I get why concealed carry license holders don't want to be on government lists, because look what happened in California. And it's not the first time. In New York, there was a newspaper that published the addresses of every registered gun owner, because in New York you have to register to own a gun, published the names, and I don't know if it was the names, published the addresses, made a map showing the addresses of every registered gun owner in New York. I looked for this one, I couldn't find it. But I believe in Iowa, there was a newspaper in Iowa that exposed a bunch of, I don't know, through open records or something, but exposed the personal information of a bunch of concealed carry license holders. But this is a perfect example of how Republicans could seize on the news cycle. Because you see, Republicans think that, oh, only the Democrat media, only the liberals get to take advantage of, you know, never letting crises go to waste. They get a mass shooting and they get to take advantage of that. There's plenty of opportunities for Republican and conservatives to take advantage of the news cycle, and they just don't have the brains or the balls, I don't know which it is, to do it. But there should be special sessions called in states that have Republican legislatures and governor. They should be passing constitutional carry. And see, again, constitutional carry, I think it's 25 states now, so it's half the country does have constitutional carry. But some of these fence sitters, they should use that as an opportunity to push it, to push constitutional carry. Because you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Once gun owners' data is out there, it will be used by radical Democrat groups. It will be used by big tech to target you. But again, 90% of Republicans have no political skill. They haven't figured out how to play offense, and they haven't figured out how to use the tyranny of the left to make the case for freedom. Instead, they sit back and they play token defense and they make excuses, and then they give in to pass compromise gun control like they did in the wake of the Uvalde shooting. And so again, that's what we got. We've got Republicans who don't play offense, never advance the cause of freedom. And when all you do is play defense, eventually there will be weaknesses. There will be things that get through, and not by mistake, but by just enough Republicans caving, like happened with this. And this whole thing, you know, the gun control bill they just passed in Congress and that Biden signed into law. I haven't read all the details of it. Supposedly, like, it tightens background checks. Who knows what that's going to, what the end result of that's going to be, you know, doesn't ban anything supposedly, but it's not going to make a damn bit of difference. And then it's just going to be like, see, well, we passed gun control and it didn't go far enough. So, now, you know, the next Uvalde. So now the opportunity to talk about constitutional carry is gone. And now we're going to be talking about Highland Park, Illinois, in the news cycle, things that the Democrats are going to use for their crises and never letting crises go to waste. And that's just, again, this was a prime opportunity. And even Fox News, Fox News should have been all over this, should have been running headlines on it. They didn't. I didn't see anything on Fox News' website. So speaking of Uvalde, again, now we're going to be off of Uvalde. We're going to be at Highland Park. But, you know, more and more information comes out about Uvalde. And I am going to lose my live listeners here. If you're listening live, you're going to be dropping off in about 45 seconds here. But I don't think I've got a lot of live listeners. We had the one caller, Joe. But the rest of this commentary will be on the podcast. You'll be able to catch it after the show's over. I could probably get another half hour of content here, so maybe at least 15 minutes. So thank you to live listeners who tuned in. And if you're listening on podcast, you don't know what I'm talking about because it's going to be seamless and you'll hear me right on through my remaining topics. So Uvalde, you know, more and more information comes out about Uvalde, how they treated it as a hostage barricade situation instead of an active shooter. There was 911 calls from inside the classroom where the shooter was holed up. We now know that there's children who died from bleeding out from survivable gunshot wounds, which is no different than the Sikh temple. The Sikh temple, they waited like hours. It was over an hour to go into the Sikh temple. And so there was people in the Sikh temple who had one gunshot wound to the leg, and they died because they bled out because they laid there for an hour because nobody went in and gave them first aid. Nobody went in and got them. The cop outside of the Sikh temple who got shot like 13 times, I forget his name. I used to know his name. Cop that got shot 13 times. Maybe his name's going to pop into my head here in a subconscious brain fart. I can picture the guy. But he got shot 13 times, and he lived because he engaged the shooter in the parking lot, which was the only shooter. They thought maybe there was two. That's why they didn't go in. But, you know, we learned from 9/11 that when someone hijacks a plane, you don't just sit back and wait for them to make their ransom demands or whatever. You got to take action because hijacking isn't what hijacking used to be. You know, this whole mass shootings, you don't sit back and set up a perimeter and play it safe and be cautious. Because people are going to die. You rush in, and if there's a shooter, you're going to engage him. If there's not, then you're going to get those people quick medical treatment. So just like the Sikh temple where many, many people died from survivable gunshot wounds, in Uvalde, Texas, many kids died, and probably some of the adults too that died, from survivable gunshot wounds that they could have lived through, could have survived if they'd have just got quick medical attention. But they died. Because for over an hour, they sat outside the classroom and didn't go in. And think about it this way. All the fucking money, all the media bullshit, all these active shooter drills. You got hospitals doing mass casualty drills. You've got all these schools, all these government entities, all these police departments, all these sheriff's departments. They've all done their mass shooter drills, active shooter drills, active shooter training. Active shooter scenarios and all of that. And then you got stuff like Uvalde. It didn't do a damn thing. All the law enforcement training, all the law enforcement expertise, one commander on the ground treats it as a hostage barricade situation instead of an active shooter lunatic situation. Because hostage barricade situation, you call the negotiators, you take your time, you negotiate with it, but this guy was an active shooter, and all they did was let kids bleed out to death in a classroom because the one commander on the scene decided to treat it like, and was he just stupid or was he, because hostage barricade is safer for law enforcement. Hostage barricade, nobody's got to run in. Nobody's got to risk their life. You know, set up a tactical perimeter. Stay behind your riot shield. Stay behind your armor shields, the vehicles, you know, stay behind, not concealment, but cover. You know, concealment just means the shooter can't see you. Cover means bullets can't reach you. Stay behind cover. That's what hostage barricade is. Maybe you get a sniper outside who can see in the window and get a shot. But certainly kids died from survivable gunshot wounds because some stupid commander or some coward commander decided to treat it like a hostage barricade situation. And that's why, again, the only person you can ever count on, if you're the teacher, you don't have, first off, you're a teacher, you know It's not a hostage barricade. It's an active shooter. If you're a teacher, you don't have the luxury of saying, oh, do I sit back and set up a perimeter and set up a... No, you're the teacher in the classroom that's under attack. You know you have to act. It's act or die. And when it's act or die, most people act because they have to. But the cops outside didn't have to act. Why? Because they didn't have to. They were safe. And now we even find out that they were, oh, the classroom was locked. The classroom wasn't even locked. That's come out now too. So now we're millions of Americans are going to lose. I don't know the gun control bill that passed, what the ramifications of that are going to end up being. But all the loss of freedoms, all the angst, all the hand-wringing, all the push for gun control, and they didn't even try to go into the classroom. They didn't even try an unlocked door. They didn't even have the school doors locked to keep the active shooter out or to keep the potential intruder out. So they can't do that. They can't keep school doors locked. They can't properly – trained law enforcement can't properly assess when to go in and take out an active shooter. All that, you remember 9/11? Oh, the radios were, you know, there was too much, you know, 9/11, the radio, radio communication wasn't, you know, they had to get new radios. They had to get digital radios because of the radios communication. They were, you know, if you've ever used Citizens Band radio, if you ever used, I mean, VHF, like we do in the boating world, you know that, you know, it's a, I don't know what the word is for it. It can be a clusterfuck, especially, you know, you're in Milwaukee, they got bridge operators on the radio. They got all stuff on the radio. And that's all you hear is this transmission. That transmission. And then I think how radios work is the strongest transmissions is one that it picks up. So, you know, I've been on my boat in Milwaukee Harbor and I pick up transmissions from South Haven, from the Coast Guard in South Haven, Michigan, but it's a weak one. So then if someone wants a bridge opening, then the bridge opening overpowers. But so, you know, all this communication issues from 9/11, where we have to get new radios, digital radios, and billions of dollars across the country spent on new communications. They could, and coordinating communication, how to coordinate communication. And here you've got 9/11 calls, 911 calls from inside them. We got 911 calls from inside the classroom from kids with cell phones. And they couldn't communicate that to the cops that are outside of the door. Or to the commander. So what did they learn from all this? What did they learn from 9/11 and how we were going to reevaluate communication? And all this? They didn't learn shit. Maybe it's because Uvalde's a small podunk town. I don't know. But the proof is in the pudding. I mean, it happened. These mistakes were made. Maybe they wouldn't be. Maybe those mistakes wouldn't happen in large cities. I doubt it. I think they would. But certainly in the small cities, we can now say that, yeah, all this training, all this, you know, 20 years since September 11th and all the mass shootings and all the terrors, terror attacks, mass shootings, all this stuff. Churches have figured it out. Many churches have armed deacons, volunteers. That's why that mass shooting in Texas that was live streamed on TV at a church, okay, it wasn't a mass shooting. The mass shooter who turned out not to be a mass shooter because he was stopped by the deacon who was armed. Now, the deacon actually lost his life, but I think only one person, maybe it was two, but this was live streamed a couple years back. I forget the town in Texas. They were live streaming their church service. A mass shooter comes in, sits down. They kind of had an eye on him because you know who's regular parishioners, regular part of the congregation, who's not. You can tell when someone's acting weird. You can tell when they didn't seem to come there for the worship. And this guy gets up, pulls a gun. The deacon engaged him right away. He engaged the deacon. The deacon got shot. He shot the guy. I think only one person died. The deacon and I think it was just the deacon and the active shooter was killed. There was 200 people in that church. And those 200 people, that could have been a 50 casualty situation. That could have been a 50 body casualty situation, 50 body count situation, but it wasn't because churches figured this out. Churches said, hey, we're not going to sit back and wait for 911. we're going to have armed people in the church. And it worked. We got proof it works. It's even on video. And yet here we have, after all the training, all the money, all the attention paid to mass shooters, to mass shooter drills, to mass casualty situations, didn't mean shit. So, and let's be real. I mean, I think more than likely this decision for the commander to treat it like a hostage barricade, I think it was likely a scared cop, scared chief. Perhaps it was bad judgment, but I think likely scared. And so all that training and all that money, just a fail, just an epic fail. And I'm back to, you are the only one who can save your life when background checks fail and lunatics get guns. And they will. I mean, because many lunatics, thugs in Milwaukee, they're going to get arrested, convicted, and go to jail. And they're not going to pass a background check, but they're going to still have guns. But these lunatics, a lot of them, it's their first rodeo. These wackos, it's their first rodeo. They're going to pass a background check. So background checks will fail. And then when locked doors are left open on schools, and when dangerous people are set back on the streets with sympathetic judges and DAs who have no sympathy for you and only sympathy for criminals, and when active shooter drills fail, and when police chiefs fail, when all those people fail, you are the only one you can count on for your self-defense. You don't get to be scared and wait because you're under attack. You have to act. I mean, the doors of the classroom were not even locked. So, and then today we've got Highland Park, and we'll find out. But, I mean, just an observation on Highland Park, like, and I'm not saying that a concealed carry license holder or an armed citizen could have stopped Highland Park. Maybe. I mean, the guy took up a sniper position on a roof. So I don't know. He had a rifle. That's tactical superiority. If I'm across the street, 200 feet away, and I got my Glock, am I going to be able to get I don't know how much of him is exposed over the parapet wall of that roof he was on, but that's got to be a pretty, pretty lucky shot. I think from 200 feet, I mean, of course, maybe if you're like right under and he's leaning over the side and you can see, I mean, then you're only 20 feet. And okay, that's an easy shot, not an easy shot. That's a high probability shot. But I'm watching these videos of people running and I'm like, okay, if I was there, and the shooting's across the street and up halfway up the block, and you see the guy leaning over the roof of that storefront over the parapet wall, and all you can see is probably the rifle, maybe shoulders and head, maybe upper torso. Is that a big enough target that for me from 200 feet with a Glock? I don't know. Taking fire, maybe when he starts taking fire, even if you hit the masonry just below him, he starts taking fire. And yeah, maybe he tucks tail and runs 20 rounds sooner. You save lives. I can't say, a church shooting, sure, you're going to be close enough to engage and stop a threat. Sniper on a roof, parade shooting, I don't know. Maybe an armed citizen would have been in a position to stop, maybe not. It's too hard to say. But I can tell you one thing's for sure is that there's no one else that's going to be able to protect you. So there's there's a video that I saw on the internet where there's the reporter was a lady, and she shot video of a deputy for Lake County's Highland Park is in Lake County, Illinois, a Lake County sheriff's deputy. There's cop cars whizzing by, ambulances whizzing by to go to the scene of, and he, this is clearly not in the downtown area of Highland Park because there's no, it's all residential buildings. And here's this sheriff's deputy with his body armor. He's in, desert tan garb, which I'm sure he wasn't wearing that day. So I don't know. Was this 20 minutes after? Was it 10 minutes after? Was it? But there he is at the tailgate of his SUV police cruiser, gearing up, putting the body armor on, putting the extra magazines in his thing. He's got a rifle on the ground. Whatever was on the ground, it had a suppressor. It had a big scope. I don't know. I couldn't tell what it was. but some kind of sniper rifle, some kind of tactical rifle. And he's just casually gearing up. And again, this is no offense to law enforcement, but he's casually gearing up. Well, the shooting was probably over for at least 5 minutes, probably 10 minutes. He was probably there. He might have been there 20 minutes after. And there he is, casually gearing up, someone who's prepared to take out, because with that kind of gear, body armor, scoped rifle with a suppressor, yeah, you could engage a rooftop shooter with success. But that guy was, again, for sure 5 minutes too late, probably 10 minutes too late, and very likely 20 minutes too late. And so, you know, all this armored Bearcats the police have, all their tactical gear, all the trunk rifles that that they keep in the back of the SUVs, that they keep in the police cruisers now, don't do a damn thing. I mean, the Sikh temple, I think they did engage it. The Sikh temple, I believe that one of the cops on scene did engage the shooter with his rifle. But, yeah, most of the time, by the time you see the guys with the rifles, they're already writing up the police reports. Yeah, here's guys walking around with their cops walking around with their ARs or whatever they're carrying, M4s or whatever. It's over. You know, that's just a security blanket making people feel good because here's a bunch of armed guys around. So, yeah, and more for Highland Park is going to come out in the next couple of days. They caught the guy. I mean, he got away initially, but they ended up catching him. And we're going to find out information. And it's just going to be another opportunity that Democrats are going to leverage in the media, and another situation where all we're going to see from Republicans is playing defense, playing defense, playing defense. Here's the last thing I was going to talk about tonight is, you know, it really irritates me how people like use me for political gain. And I'm going to use this as one example, and it's not the most egregious one, but I so often have political candidates contact me. Oh yeah. We need your help. We need your help to get this person elected, this person elected, this person. We need your help. This, you know, oh yeah, you know, you need, and they act like they're doing you a favor. They're like, oh, you need pro-gun people. And then these people get in office. And again, I don't want to sound too jaded, but you know, these people then get in office, and then did they ever get in office and say, hey, Nick, we really need to pass some program legislation. You know, what do you guys think we need here? School grounds carry or what? You know, Dave Craig did that. Dave Craig used to, when Senator Craig, he used to reach out to me and say, hey, Nick, you know, what do we need here in Wisconsin? I mean, he's a good guy, but I'm going to see, he's the only one. And he never even asked for help during his campaigns. So now I got people, and I like these people, I've known them for a long time. I'm not going to name names, but there's people from Rock County reaching out to me because they want me to offer, and I've already told people, Wisconsin Carry does not do endorsements. I sometimes do personal endorsements, but Wisconsin Carry doesn't. And why don't we do endorsements? Well, certainly not, at least not in the primary, because it wouldn't be right for, and there's certainly Wisconsin Carry members who are supporters of Kevin Nicholson. There's talking about the governor's race. Wisconsin Carry members who are supporters of Tim Michaels, Wisconsin Carry members who are supporters of Tim Rantham, Wisconsin Carry members who are supporters of Rebecca Clefish. And it wouldn't be right for me to say, to use any resources from Wisconsin Carry, even the name, to advocate for someone who some of our members, and look, if we've got members who support Tony Evers, I mean, sorry, you're in the wrong group. I mean, and we may have, and it's not that I'm going to kick them out, but if you donate to Wisconsin Carry, you should expect that resources might be used against Tony Evers. Now, we really don't. We don't run political ads or anything like that, but again, in a primary, it wouldn't be right for me to use any of Wisconsin Carry's resources for any candidate, because there could certainly be Wisconsin Carry members who donate to us, and then I'd be using resources that they paid for. Because even the website, even we use a free email service, but even the website for Wisconsin Carry, is the hosting fees are paid for by member donations. So if I was even to put something on the website to say, oh, this person, this in this primary, that would wouldn't be right. It would be unfair for me to use resources from Wisconsin Carry against people who, in the interest of, against the interest of people who donated that money. So I've shared this with people, but now I've got people from Rock County wanting me to talk to this candidate, Craig Keller. Now, I don't know anything about, the Rock County Sheriff's race. I've asked some questions of the person who's trying to get me to offer my help there. But like, I don't know what's going on in the Rock County Sheriff's race, nor do I know anything about any of the candidates. I mean, is there a primary? Who's the other candidates running? Are there other conservatives running? And then I've been told this person, oh, Craig Keller, he supports constitutional carry. Look, constitutional carry is a goal for Wisconsin Carry, although more pressing legislation we'd like to see is school grounds carry, so parents aren't accidental felons for driving on school grounds armed their vehicle. But all that said, those are both state legislative issues. And my experience is, you know, some law enforcement organizations, they may have some lobbying influence in Madison, but you know, the sheriff himself isn't a legislative position to advance constitutional carry or executive position to sign off on any bills. So when I hear people say, oh, support this guy for sheriff, he supports constitutional carry, again, it's I don't fall for the constitutional carry stake. There's even some Wisconsin Carry members, oh, support what was that guy's name who was running for governor for the last 3 years? Was it Tim something? Wickman. You know, Wickman supports constitutional carry. You know, support. Like, too many people think, oh, I'm just going to say constitutional carry, and then I'll get the support of all the gun. Like, it's got to be more than that. So, I mean, I will say that the biggest interest from many of our members that I've ever heard from sheriffs on the gun issue is sign-offs on NFA license items. Now, I'm not super familiar with the National Firearms Act, the process, but for people who want to buy like suppressors and other Title II or NFA firearms, you have to have a certifying official sign off on the ATF Form 1 or whatever that ATF form is, and that's often the sheriff. So, I mean, dragging the constitutional carry stake through a den of hungry, freedom-hungry lions is going to get some people's attention. And if you say, oh, this sheriff supports constitutional carry, well, that's great, but the sheriff doesn't have much legislative power. And for that reason, I don't know how strong of an election issue it should be in a sheriff's race. Now, don't get me wrong. Outspoken pro-gun sheriffs are important and can do a lot in county. You know, if Craig Keller is going to campaign that he wouldn't enforce concealed carry laws, meaning each of his deputies who catches a law-abiding citizen with a concealed gun, say during a traffic stop, but committing no other offense, they wouldn't arrest or cite for that. I mean, that's great. I'm interested. But I'd be surprised if a sheriff would publicly say that. If a sheriff would publicly say, hey, I'm not going to enforce concealed carry laws. I'm going to enforce crimes like murder and armed robbery and assault and rape and battery and all those other things. But if my deputies catch someone with a concealed gun, even if they don't have a concealed carry license, if they weren't doing anything wrong, if it was just a traffic stop, I mean, they might get a speeding ticket, but I'm not going to, I mean, that I'm interested. But I'd be very shocked if the sheriff's going to publicly say that. Sheriffs do have full control over NFA sign-offs. And I remember one of the things people used to complain about Sheriff Clark was that he wouldn't sign off on NFA items for people who lived in Milwaukee County. So if Craig Keller wants to campaign promise to sign off on suppressors and short barrel rifles and pen guns and machine guns for people, that's notable. So, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. It just, I say it irks me. It's on a scale of 10, I'm furious, and 1, I'm amused by it. It's like a 3 to 5, you know, people always want Wisconsin Carry's help. Oh, it's election season. Oh, we want Wisconsin Carry's help. No one ever, again, Senator Craig and Lucien, no one ever comes to Wisconsin Carry after they get elected and say, hey, I've got some pro-gun legislation I want to pass here. I could use your support. I could use your, you know, I could use your ideas. Do you have an idea of strategy? No one ever wants that. They just don't want to come anywhere near gun issues. But oh, during election season, And that's not even like, look, I've, you know, Wisconsin has been around for 12 years now, 13. And I realize now what Wisconsin Carry does. Doesn't mean it's always going to be like this, but what Wisconsin Carry does really, really, really well is we sue people. Wisconsin Carry is really good at suing people, and we're really effective in the courtroom. What are we not good at? Grassroots legislative activism. We're not good, and we used to be better because, man, years ago, if I said, hey, make some phone calls, legislators got phone calls. This was like 2011, 12, 13. But after we get shafted so many times, people realize phone calls don't matter, you know? And then they stop making the phone calls. So, you know, we had a flash in the pan with grassroots legislative activism, but Republicans in Madison stifled that. So, yeah, so Wisconsin Carry, we're not very good at grassroots legislative activism. I'm just being honest. Hopefully we could be in the future. Hopefully in the future we could have an impact on legislation. Right now we've not been very good at that. PR, yeah, reasonably good at PR. Pat myself in the back a little bit. I mean, I think I get a pretty very good representation, very accurate representation, very truth-based representation out in the media. Now, they don't always put the good clips on, but I mean, when I go on talk radio, Vicki McKenna's show, I get to say my piece. I get to put out the full angles. So I think Wisconsin Carry does public relations relatively well. But what do we do really well? We're really good at suing people. We're really good at winning lawsuits. Really, really, really good. Education? Yeah, we were really, really good at the free concealed carry classes. We're still good at it, but we only have one instructor who's real active now. But we put 30,000 people through our free training. So I'd say we're really good at that. Are we good at, I don't know how many, I'd have to look. I don't know how many members Wisconsin Carry has in Rock County, but like, I'm not going to email them and say, hey, support Craig Keller. And I might, and they want me to talk to Craig Keller, and I'll probably end up talking to him. And if I talk to Craig Keller, I'm like, oh, this guy's great. But still, it's just, there's not a lot that Wisconsin Carry can do in an election. And who, why do people in Rock County want Nick Clark from Wisconsin Carry telling them who to vote for? Maybe there's a couple people who don't know, you know, they're not. But I think the people in Rock County probably know the Rock County Sheriff's candidates better than someone outside Rock County. So again, people, they drag the constitutional carry stake in front of me and want me to jump all over it. And then, I'll support Craig Keller. I'll give him a personal endorsement. And I'll start. I mean, it's just a little bit annoying. All right. Well, that's the show for tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed the return to the airwaves here for Well-Armed Radio. And that my, what was that? A good half hour, 30 minute monologue on crossing Lake Michigan wasn't too boring for you, because it was an interesting trip. It was a fun trip. It was an experience. So thought maybe some might like to hear about it, live a little bit vicariously through someone who did it. So we may be on next week. I always hope to be on next week, but we'll see when the time comes if I got time to squeeze out a show or not. I for sure want to stay bi-weekly. And again, I said that in June when I did my last episode, and here it was 1 month between. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for thanks to Joe for calling in. You guys have a great week. Stay free, carry on, and be well armed.
Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.